I'm Dale Jampgard, and I come from Portland, Oregon, for those who may be new to the class today. I, in Portland, have worked with Lutheran Family Service for 14 years as a director of life education. And so my concern in that role was, how do we bring some of the understanding of psychology and sociology to bear in helping us understand more deeply what our faith is about and how our faith can be a resource for life. And so the sessions, as you probably, if you've been here before, may have caught, is that that's what I'm attempting to do, is relate things that we believe in our Christian faith to those things that happen in our mind and in our body and in our spirit. And today I would like to continue along that line under the theme being powerfully peaceful. So often when we think of peace, when we think of relaxation, we don't think of power. Relaxation often in our mind means being flaked out in front of the TV, you know, or being drowsy, or, you know, this is relaxed. Well, the problem then for us is that when we begin to confront the issues and the challenges and the difficult situations in life, we think that we have to be the opposite of that, because relaxation, certainly at that point, has no place to be drowsy and flaked out. So what we tend to do is be like this. And that is not necessarily then our greatest power. There is a power in a peacefulness, and it's discovering the combination of those two. A familiar verse, and one that is a real favorite for me. In Isaiah 40, or a couple of verses here. The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youths shall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. How would you like some of that on your hike to Holden? And then another familiar verse. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. And again, Jesus saying there is something different about the peace that he wants us to know and understand in him. And then a letter to Timothy, where is it? Philippians, the peace that passes all understanding. Well, let's explore that in some different ways. What does that mean? What is it about? First, to do that, one of the things I like to do is experience something rather than just talk about it, so that we kind of have a sense of what happens in us. So what I'd like to have you do now is find a partner about your same size and fan out, find some space, as much space as you can in here. So fill the whole room and stand facing that partner. And if you'll just exchange names if you don't know the person, and then stand quietly, and then I'll give you the instructions from there on. Okay, now move so you've got some room around you. And decide who is going to be A and who is going to be B.
Decide what?
A or B.
Okay, I'll take care.
Okay. Now, A is what I would like. Notice the size of the model I chose here.
Same size.
Okay, A is what I want you to do is stand up to B's, and don't let B push you over. And I want you to stand with your feet like this, just a little ways apart, and stand up and face them, and whatever you do, Don't let it push you over. Now, B's, what I want you to do is see how much it takes to push A over. In this way. Push on the shoulders, and if they lean against you, you know, you just let them fall flat on their face. But, and then start softly at first, and then push a little harder, and then see what it takes to push them over. Okay?
You have to breathe out. Hurt.
Okay, A, face up to them now. Don't let them push it. Now, let's go back. And A's, this time what I'd like to have you do, take a good full breath of air and imagine that your energy is flowing down into the floor like roots. Flex your knees, become aware of your legs, drop your shoulders, let yourself breathe, and sense that kind of strength that you can stand there. And just feel your legs, feel your connection with the floor. Okay, and now A, begin to push and see what it takes to push A over. About a foot apart. And now bring your awareness down into your legs. And imagine like energy flowing down through you into the ground as though you had roots. And flex your knees some. Feel your legs under you. Feel the connection with the floor. Let your shoulders drop. Let yourself breathe and let yourself feel the strength. Your ability to stand. Okay, now A's begin to push. Push. Go ahead.
I don't think I need
to notice.
Harder
to
push them over.
It was harder to push them over, okay?
As long as you're flexible, you can take a lot more and push a lot more aggression against you if you don't, fight it.
You don't fight it. Okay. Yeah.
So like a palm tree in a big stiff wind, you know, remain rooted, but yet the top back and forth. You know.
Okay, and in which one did you feel stronger?
Second.
Okay. In which one were you trying to be stronger? Okay. A lot of the tension in our bodies is related to trying to be strong. A lot of the pain and the ache that you experience is trying to avoid pain and be strong. Let me share a couple of quotes. I don't know if you are familiar with a book by Ernst Becker called The Denial of Death, but Ernst Becker is a psychologist who was not a Christian and yet by the time of his death seemed to be a Christian, ready to make a confession of faith. But he came at it strictly as a psychologist and as a scientist, and yet I think you'll find what he says most interesting, and here are some quotes. He says, nature has protected the lower animals by endowing them with instincts. An instinct is a programmed perception that calls into play a programmed reaction. It's very simple. Animals are not moved by what they cannot react to. They live in a tiny world, a sliver of reality, one neurochemical program that keeps them walking behind their nose and shuts out everything else. But look at man, the impossible creature. Here, nature seems to have thrown caution to the winds along with the programmed instinct. She created an animal who has no defense against full perception of the external world, an animal completely open to experience. He can relate not only to animals in his own species, but in some ways to all other species. He can contemplate not only what is edible for him, but everything that grows. He not only lives in this moment, but expands his inner self to yesterday, his curiosity to centuries ago, his fears to 5 billion years from now when the sun will cool, his hopes to an eternity from now. He lives not only on a tiny territory, nor even on an entire planet, but in a galaxy, in a universe, and in dimensions beyond visible universes. It is appalling, the burden that man bears, the experiential burden. He doesn't know who he is, why he was born, what he is doing on the planet, what he is supposed to do, what he can expect. His own existence is incomprehensible to him, a miracle just like the rest of creation. Closer to him, right near his pounding heart, but for that reason, all the more strange. Each thing is a problem, and man can shut out nothing. As Maslow has well said, it is precisely the godlike in ourselves that we are ambivalent about, fascinated by and fearful of, motivated to and defensive against. This is one aspect of the basic human predicament, that we are simultaneously worms and gods. That's a quote from Maslow, and then Becker adds, there it is again, gods with anuses. And then he goes on, all of us are driven to be supported in a self-forgetful way, ignorant of what energies we really draw on, of the kind of lie we have fashioned in order to live securely and serenely. Augustine was a master analyst of this, as were Kierkegaard, Schiller, and Tillich. They saw that man could strut and boast all he wanted, but that he really drew his courage to be from a god with a small g, and then parentheses, a string of sexual conquests, a big brother, a flag, a proletariat, and the fetish of money and the size of the bank balance, etc. The defenses that form a person's character support a grand illusion, and when we grasp this, we can understand the full drivenness of man. What then is our anxiety about? Jesus talks about don't be anxious about what you eat, what you drink, what you wear. And then he adds another one. He says, and which of you by being anxious can add one cubit to your span of life? Or I think what he's saying there, to paraphrase it in language that may mean more to us, which of you by being anxious can make yourself more than you are? And yet it's that feeling that somehow we're not enough, that we need to be more than we are, and that we attempt then to make ourselves more, and we hang on to such things as our role or our things or our powers, our popularity, etc. And out of that then comes our anxiety. Let's bring that down to something that, you know, that's talking in psychological, theological language. Let's talk some language that may be closer to home. We have often a drivenness in us that we're not aware of, because it seems so reasonable to us. One Sunday afternoon, I was out driving, and I decided to go for a ride. I had no place to go, and I pulled up to a stoplight, and it changed, and I took off, and I was weaving in and out of traffic, and I was just making very good time, you know, really moving along, and it all of a sudden hit me, I didn't have any place to go. And it was very apparent at that moment that my need to hurry was my need, not the situation. And then I thought, now, how did I learn that I have to hurry in life? That every time I do something, I have to hurry up. And I thought back, and I can see my dad running as he mows the lawn, and coming in to have a bite to eat, and inhaling his soup, and rushing out the door. Whatever my dad did, he hurried up. And the message I got was that you better hurry in life, and it felt to me, I'm sure I was reminded, come on, hurry up, hurry up, come on, hurry up. And I got the feeling that in order then to be somebody, that you better hurry, because if you don't, you're going to be a lazy no good. But we get those messages in different ways. I've jotted some favorite drivers that kids get. And these then come. We're afraid somehow that we're a nobody. We're afraid that we're not enough. And that comes very early in childhood as things don't seem to meet all our needs. We get afraid. And then we tune into our parents and say, what do I need to do to be somebody? And they usually provide some kind of an answer. Well, if you will just do this, then you will make it in life. If you will just try harder. Whatever you do, try harder. And that doesn't need to mean doing it. This is the kind of person that no matter what they've done during a day, they will often come out saying, oh boy, what a day. It sure has been rough. Boy, that was a tough job. Because whatever they're doing, they're always making sure that they're trying hard. Because that's the way they approach things. Or you may be familiar with the be perfect. You know, Johnny, your four A's are fine, but with a little effort, that B could have become an A. And the message then is that you haven't made it yet, Johnny. You're not enough. You've got to be perfect in order to be enough. And that kind of person then, no matter how well they do, you can talk to them after they've done something, no matter how well they do, they will say, oh yes, but I could have done better. That was not quite perfect. And they always can feel bad about what wasn't perfect. And, you know, sometimes it's amazing to us. You know, you can talk to people who have grand successes, and they're always feeling bad about something that wasn't quite right. And the kind of tension that they put in themselves. Be strong. That's often given to boys. Don't show any weakness. Always act like you've got it all together. You know, be strong. Don't cry. That kind of thing. Or to girls, often it comes across as be attractive. That isn't often, you know, look nice, have a nice appearance, always, you know, be prim, proper. But look again like you aren't afraid or aren't scared or anything. You know, always look like you've got it all together. And then please me, mother says or father says, well, if you really want to be somebody, just please me. And do what I tell you. Make me happy. And this person goes on in life then, and they're always, in whatever situation they're in, they're always anxious about, let's see, is everything going okay? Are you doing what you want to do? Are you happy? And so forth. They're tuned into everyone around them. And they're always anxious because if someone isn't happy, they're upset. This is the kind of person that you say, hey, should we go to a show tonight? And they say, I don't know, do you want to? Oh, okay, if you want to. And you say, well, what movie would you like to go to? Well, I don't care, what movie do you want to go to? And they always then want you to say what you want, because they will never say. They need to please you. And they're, you know, because they feel that if they please everybody, if they make mother happy or if they make father happy, then they'll be somebody. And finally, a favorite one is be responsible, especially for we in the church. Mine was a be responsible family. Whatever happened at church, on the way home, we'd discuss it and talk about how it could have been done better and what we ought to do about it. And I got the feeling that the way to really be somebody in this world was to be responsible for everybody else and their lives and everything else. Now, doesn't that sound noble? Isn't that really what it means to be a Christian? Well, I thought that's what it meant. And so I went on, I became a social worker, and that wasn't enough. I went on, became a pastor, and, you know, I thought, boy, I'm really doing my thing here. I really am somebody. And then I began to realize, as I learned more, that that was my enslavement. That being responsible was the height of my sin. Now, how does that work? Well, if I'm trying to prove that I'm somebody by how responsible I am, then I have to strain myself. You know the kind of tension when you're always responsible for what's happening? I can feel it in the shoulders, tighten here, tighten guts, so forth, the way I hold and the tension in my body. And then when I relate to you, I can't kind of enjoy you and love you for the person that you are. I've got to find out what your problem is. So I can solve your problem, you see, because then I can know that I'm being responsible. So I don't see you for who you are, I see you as a problem. It becomes very manipulative, because I have to solve your problem, or I have to give you something, I have to make your life better in order for me to be responsible. I can't love you. And finally, I can't really help you, because I will only hear from you what I can solve. I won't hear really where you're at. So a lot of the ways that I was a pastor And a lot of the ways that I was a counselor was ultimately manipulative and destructive to me and potentially to others. Not always. But it was manipulative. And in that sense, I was in a trap. I was in a prison. And I was anxious. Because, boy, I had to make it all work or I was going to be a nobody. Now, that's what Becker is talking about. That's what our anxiety is about. That's how we try to make ourselves strong. We feel driven to hang on to things, to be able to do certain things, because and to get certain responses, because if we don't, we'll be nobody. And then Jesus comes along and he says, he who will find his life will lose it. He who succeeds in his effort to be somebody will lose life. It's harder for the rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than for the camel to pass through an eye of a needle. Is it harder for Americans to enter the kingdom of heaven than for the camel to pass through an eye of a needle? We have made it. We are successes in so many ways. And we have such an arsenal to keep us secure. How do we die? How do we let go of all that we're hanging on to in order that we might finally be at peace with who we are? And then not do what we do in order to be somebody, but because we are somebody by the grace of God. One of the difficulties in stopping everything, in being quiet, doing nothing, is that we're afraid if we're doing nothing, if we're thinking nothing, then we are nothing. And so we keep ourselves so busy in our head and in our activity. And in many ways we're afraid that finally if we stopped, we would be alone and lonely and scared and nothing. And that's what keeps us running in many ways. And that's what Jesus means in he who finds his life will lose it. But he who loses his life lets go of whatever we're hanging on to and receives the realization, the gospel, that you are somebody by the grace of God, that you are of value, you are of worth. There is nothing you can prove. It is only a gift to be received. It is, in a sense, receive yourself as a gift from God to be lived. And then let go. It's that letting go in which we find our strength. What does a weightlifter do when he lifts weight? He doesn't... He takes a good full breath and then he exhales as he lifts. He lets go and discovers the strength that is in him. You might want to try that on the trail. You know, when the trail gets really steep, just shorten your steps up, take a good full breath and exhale. Rather than, oh boy, I don't know if I'm going to make it. You know, and we start straining and tightening up, and we say, oh boy, this is getting steep, and we really tighten up ourselves. Or if you're running up, you want to go up a flight of steps, take a good full breath at the bottom, and then exhale and just let yourself go up the steps. And I think you'll find something interesting happens. That the strength is in us. We have tremendous energy and power. We know this because we hear of examples in situations, for instance, where someone's trapped under a car and one or two people all of a sudden just they lift at that car, because at that point they let themselves use all of their energy and all their power. We have far more power and energy than we make use of. Most of our tiredness and fatigue is because we are driving ourselves and we are tensing ourselves. And this is why then we're talking about relaxation and letting go. Let's explore what happens when we let go. And I'd like to do this by having you sit I'm going to say sit fairly straight, and now listen. Not as Mother said, straight. But straighten out your spine so that your body can be draped over your skeleton. Your skeleton will hold you, and you can let go of most of your muscles when your skeletal frame is straight. When it's like this, you need all kinds of muscles to keep you in balance. And you may think that you're more relaxed, but often not. Okay, now take a good full breath and slowly exhale and then close your eyes. Ah, marvelous. I heard a yawn. Okay, that's God's gift. Notice that he combines breathing with often a desire to stretch. And so let yourself do that. Feel in your body where you'd like to have a release. And just take a moment, take a good full breath and yawn and stretch. And often you twist a little bit just to get that one little spot that feels like... You yawn when you're tired in order to free your energy. It's a way of waking up. Now be aware of what happened as you again let go and watch what happened in your body. You probably released some tension and you may feel some energy moving in your body as a result of that stretch and that yawn. Stretching and breathing in the morning is a marvelous way to prepare your body for the day. It's one of the ways of letting go of the tension that's in you. Okay, and now what I'd like to have you do, again, just with the quiet of your breathing, be aware of your breathing. Turn to someone near you and share it. Okay, would you share some of the things you noticed? What kinds of things happened?
We fell asleep.
Okay.
I started yawning and I couldn't stop yawning. I probably yawned 12 once you said it was okay to yawn. I think I yawned about 12 times. My eyes were watering.
Okay.
I was sniffing. And see, I was trying not to sniff because she doesn't like it.
She was rubbing her thumb.
Well, it depends on what you mean by the word. In one sense, hypnosis means a deep trance in which you're no longer in control, but you're under the control of the hypnotic suggestion. No. The other understanding of hypnosis is any time that we really begin to let go of our busy mind and our thinking and begin to relax and open up. In a sense, what we do is we shift out of our beta brain waves into our alpha brain waves. Our brain waves slow down, and when we do that, we're much more relaxed, much more open, our mind is more open, and that just that relaxed state can be called a hypnotic state in the broadest sense of the term. But the person is usually still aware of everything that's happening and still is in control of what's happening, and not under the suggestive power of the hypnotic trance. So in that sense, yes, it was a light hypnotic trance.
I enjoyed being free enough to feel so at peace with my body that I can't feel anything. It's like I'm floating and my feet aren't on the floor. And I can't feel anything, but like Jeannie and I were saying, we could feel our heartbeat, and normally we can't feel that.
Uh-huh.
But it's so good to feel at peace that you just don't feel like you want to move or that you're so light you can't.
Yeah, so light.
Mm-hmm. You know, several times I've been out working in the evening, probably laid back in a lazy boy reclining chair after eating an evening meal, and fall asleep. Probably go to sleep 10 minutes. And before that, I felt like, you know, I was pretty tired. Wake up, I'm ready to go again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What you've done then is let go of the tensions the tiredness was about, and the energy begins to flow, and you're ready to go.
But now I'm keeping my head up. Many of the times, his mother always ran, and he does everything really fast. But when he completely relaxes. If he sits down to read the paper or to watch a program, he completely relaxes. And I keep thinking I have all these other things to do, and I run around and don't get nearly as much done as he does. And I don't relax as much.
That's because I have a clear conscience about working.
Okay, that helps.
Did you mark it?
So you're recognizing that you have kind of an addiction to doing, addiction to having to keep busy and doing things, and you may want to explore then how to let go of that, so that at times you can give yourself some real total relaxation from that.
When I'm away now up here, I can totally relax, but as soon as I get home, I think of all the things I should be doing. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I don't get them all done. You know, I should just do a thing and then say, well, this is the rest, and I'll relax.
Yeah, okay.
I think one thing I know, and kind of went through this time, is whenever I have pain, muscle pain or whatever, instead of fighting it, to almost relax myself into it, instead of holding myself back and I'm not going to feel it, not tensing more muscles to prevent the one pulled muscle or something from being strained, is to just let myself sink into it and kind of feel myself. Basically, it's a matter of relaxing. It hurts at first more, but then the pain relaxes, especially when it's muscle pain.
Yeah.
And this is one thing that, as far as our labor pain goes.
Yes, I'm sure the labor training, you're getting this too. Move towards the pain.
Mm-hmm. And
now, what happened when you brought your awareness to a part of your body?
It felt warmer.
Felt warmer and let's go. You notice how the tension goes? You bring your awareness to a part and all of a sudden it just kind of goes. Now, what happens is that we bring our awareness to that part of the body, and we bring that part of the body, in a sense, into touch with the now. The tension in your body, for the most part, is related to things in the past, not what's going on right now. And as you kind of bring your information of what's going on right now to that part of the body, it says, oh, I don't need to be tense right now. Sometimes I see smiles on people's faces when I say, be aware of the extent to which you're trusting the chair, and they kind of go, I don't have to be up like this. So, these drivers in our head are also incorporated into our body. And we try to hold our body. We hold ourselves in, down, up, back, you know, whatever way we think we have to in order to be somebody. I have to be more than I am, bigger than I am, tighter than I am. Don't breathe, don't be noticed, so I hold myself in. Or I mean, I have to be strong, and we hold ourselves out. We translate whatever we feel we need to be into the way we hold our body. And that's coming out of the past. I've got to do this. And when we bring our awareness to part of our body, it lets go. Now, the same thing is true of pain. And you like your point. When you have pain, if you're afraid of the pain, you try to get away from it. And what you experience then is the pain that you're afraid of, not the pain itself. And the pain you're afraid of is bigger than the pain that's there, usually. By moving toward the pain, saying, oh, I'm just going to go in and feel that pain. See what it's like. What's going on in there? See what it's like. And often then, it still hurts, but you say, oh, that's interesting. There's some pain there. And we can roll with it. And it's that breathing, it's the letting go, again, with the birthing training. You learn to breathe and let go and be with the pain and just let it happen. And we're discovering that people can take the pain and be a lot more relaxed than we used to think. We used to build up a tremendous fear around childbirth of, you know, the pain is going to be so awful, and we've got to give you all kinds of ways to deal with it and so forth. And I think the fear of the pain magnified the experience of it. How do we find peace then? Well, part of it is exploring what we're doing right now. For instance, if you never spend any time doing what we did right now, how are you ever going to find some kind of real relaxation when you're in a tense, challenging, stressful situation? If you don't know where neutral is, you're not going to find it when you need it. This is why the idea of meditation, of a period of quiet, of some time in which you say it's time to do nothing. That quote that was humorously attributed to Buddha, don't just do something, stand there. But our society says, don't just stand there, do something. And we really have the sense that if you are doing nothing, somehow, that there's of no value in that, and that there's something almost bad about that. So one is, discover where neutral is. And secondly, then find some ways of shifting into that neutral. For instance, what did it feel like to you as you were in this state? Maybe pick a phrase. It was like, just in your mind, if you were to pick a word or two that would describe what you experienced in the midst of the last exercise, what would those word or two be to you? Just think of a word or two.
Let go.
Okay.
Quiet.
Out of gear.
Peaceful.
Peaceful. Okay. Soothing.
Floating.
Okay. Now, whatever word you picked, when you're about ready to move into a stressful situation, or if you're in it, just take that word or two and replay it in your mind. And it's often useful to use your breath. Bringing your awareness to your breath, one of the reasons for this is, one is that as a child we often held our breath in order to control emotions. So we tighten our breath and move up into our head and try to solve it with our head. We're trying to reverse that process now. We're trying to say, get in touch with the body. So one of the ways of doing that is to move your awareness to your breathing. And to move to what we might call then a relaxed, alert stance. Relaxed but clear. In other words, you're not flaking out, you want to be ready. One of the ways would be to take a couple of really full breaths. We don't have time to do this, or I'd take you through it. But take a couple of full breaths and hold them. And then as you exhale, say the word or two that you have. Floating. Let go. Whatever your word was. Peace. Be still. And what will happen is your mind will say, oh yeah, I know what that experience was. I can move to that. So take two full breaths and hold them. That's kind of a way to, in a tense situation, to get the attention of your mind. And then take two breaths and hold them just a very short time. The first time, hold them quite a while. The second time, just a short time. Hold, let go. Hold and let go. And on the exhale, each time you exhale, use your word. And it becomes a trigger for your mind. And then the third time, this is six breaths. The third pair, you just take a good full breath, and then when you reach the full point, then you just slowly exhale. Let go. Be still. Okay, for just a moment, quietly to yourself, say your word seven times. Whatever your word was, close your eyes, and just say that word seven times. You may in that moment have caught a way that having a word or a phrase, something that reminds you of a way that you can feel, helps you to again move into that state. And it's reprogramming our mind. In other words, what you experience is, the way I had to be as a child when this happened was this. And so when this happens, I become this. And what we're doing now is saying another way to be is this, and some ways to signal that is with a word, or with breathing, or with some other kind of shift, where we then move to what we can call the relaxed state, And I call it relaxed alert, to make it different from just getting sleepy. And it's being relaxed and our mind is clear, and then we're ready to see and to do what needs to be done in a stressful situation. Now, one of the, again, because much of the tension in our body has to do with what is in the past, either the past today or the past in our childhood, one of the things that can be helpful in terms of maintaining a state of peace is having a way to finish a day or finish an experience. Some of you were here the other day, on Tuesday was it, when we went back into the past to an upsetting experience. And we took time to be with ourselves. Say we were 5 years old, we'd go back and be with ourselves. Or say we were even 20 years old when we had an upsetting experience. And we help ourselves understand more fully what was happening, and we give to ourselves, ultimately, the word of the gospel. We bring the word of the gospel to that point of fear, and we share it with ourselves and bless ourselves and help us let go of that situation. And that, in a sense, is what confession is. Underlying all sin is finally fear. We either build our life on fear of being nobody, or we build our life on faith, receiving the gift of somebodyness by the grace of God. And so, bring the word of forgiveness to that word of fear, where we weren't enough or others weren't enough, is a way of letting go. At the end of the day, let your mind go back and say, what was upsetting today? What was I anxious about? And deal with that. Again, bring to yourself a word of forgiveness, of peace, and the sense of hope in the resurrection. Go into some of what you were, just what was I anxious about? Really, what was I afraid of today? What's driving me? What am I hanging on to as though I'm going to lose everything if I lose it? I'm so afraid of someone being critical of me, or I'm so afraid of losing this deal, or losing some money, or losing this position. What am I hanging on to? And take that time then to finish the day and let go. And there's a fellow, Jack Schwartz, who is a psychic type person who can do rather phenomenal things with his mind. He does this, and for some 20 years he's been getting on along quite easily on 2 to 3 hours of sleep. Why? Because dreaming often tries to do this for us on an unconscious level. It tries to make sense out of those events in our day that were unfinished. And when we take care of that with forgiveness, again, we are renewed and we have our strength. What's that verse in the Psalms? That if we confess our sins, if we don't, why, our strength is dried up. But if we confess, we are renewed, we are refreshed. So that then becomes the way to what I believe is Jesus' peace that passes understanding. Any closing comments or questions as we finish up here?
One of the things that I thought of, maybe you were saying, if somebody in the workplace or children came up to me and very rushed, excited, and I just stopped and took a few breaths, I think it would take this could help to take the stress out of their anxiety also.
Yes.
And instead of what I usually do is, oh, okay, I join into their excitement and stress, and I think we could take the stress out of both by just stopping there.
The picture that came to my mind is the fisherman. I'll get this fisherman on a sea saying, Jesus, the storm. He says, oh, men of little faith. Okay, wind, take it easy. Yeah. As we let go of our fear and be with, we help others let go of theirs.